Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, the coronavirus once again came back as the dominant story of the week. Record number of cases in California, huge spikes in other states like Texas and Arizona, and a lot of concern about, are we going back towards lockdown? Imperial County in California actually is. Stay-at-home orders back imposed there. San Francisco pausing on some of its reopening. So we talked with Dr. Deborah Birx, who is the head of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, one of the top people in the entire country actually dealing with the policymaking on how to deal with coronavirus. So we talked to her on a day that she gave her first briefing publicly in 2 months. Interesting to hear her perspective. Another big issue is that of schools. What are they going to look like in the fall? What does this mean for kids, for parents? Are we going to see high school sports? Talk about all that with the top guy in the whole state on that issue, the California Superintendent of Public Instruction, Tony Thurman, on The Issue Is for the first time. And then we talk about the politics of all of this with two people who are not on for the first time, two of our favorites, Carla Marinucci of Politico and Brian Goldsmith, Democratic political consultant. And they talked about the issue of Karen Bass. We had on a couple weeks ago. Now she's being vetted to be the VP. Could that really happen? We also talked about Governor Newsom and his extraordinary challenge right now in trying to deal with this issue. But we begin with the coronavirus and the latest on the fight from the head of the Coronavirus Task Force from the White House, Deborah Birx.
Dr. Birx, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thank you. Good to see you again.
All right. Let's talk about California, since we're California's only statewide political show. We are seeing the numbers go up in California. At the same time, we see the reopening continue. Do you think the approach that is happening in California right now is the right one? Is it safe?
Well, I really appreciate what the governor and local mayors have been doing of expanding testing. And I think the most recent expansion of really bringing testing to the communities that are most at risk and having the highest rate of new infections, absolutely key.
Well, speaking of testing, you've talked about the importance of testing on this show before. Dr. Fauci has talked about the importance of testing on this show before. But in the last week, we saw the president say that he instructed his team to do less testing. Did he tell you that? And do you think that that's a good idea?
No, he did not tell me that. And he's never told us that. I think he's very proud of what he's been able to bring to bear for testing. It's the federal government who worked with the private sector to expand these platforms, make this available. And every day we're sending out swabs and transport media and extraction media to states so they can expand testing. When you have this amount of asymptomatic spread, we know how many young people now are asymptomatic. It's literally could be as high as 60%, maybe 40 to 60%. They don't know they're infected. The only way you're going to find them is through testing.
So then why do you think he would say that he wanted less testing?
Because everybody's complaining about the cases. And so the cases now in places like California, and California has to watch for this, your test positive rate is starting to creep up. And that really illustrates expanding community spread. So we do have states today that have dramatically increased testing. And what do I mean? I mean doing 2 and 3 times more testing this month than they did before. But they're actually dropping the number of people that test positive. That means you're really where you should be.
And another way that experts say will stop the virus is by wearing masks, of course. This is something that you are pushing out pretty strongly. But at the beginning of all this, we heard from a lot of experts, including Dr. Fauci, who said that masks weren't needed. And I think a lot of people are now confused. They say everybody tells us now we need to wear masks, but at the beginning, we weren't supposed to wear masks. If earlier on we were told to wear masks, do you think that would have made more of a difference? Do you think we missed an opportunity on that one?
Well, you know, it's a great question, because back at the beginning, we didn't have the physics studies that MIT and others have put out that have really done elegant research to show exactly how many particles come out of our mouth when we're speaking. I don't think any of us knew how many viral particles could potentially be produced and spread by speaking alone. We knew shouting, we knew coughing, we knew sneezing. So this was new research, and I think since the moment that research came out is the moment we immediately changed. And I think sometimes it's difficult for the public to understand that none of us had experience with this virus or with the immune responses to the virus, and now we do have a lot more experience. And so our messaging is going to change, because you would want us to bring the best science to the American people as quickly as possible.
In terms of the task force, we finally saw the task force back doing a briefing again. I know you've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes for the last 2 months. I'm wondering why the decision to come forward now, and also maybe what is the biggest misconception of what it's actually like working for President Trump?
Well, from the moment I arrived in the White House, everyone has been extraordinarily nice and kind. And that's amazing when you're under the amount of pressure that this pandemic has brought to everybody in the White House, because they're deep concern for the American people. And so we've continued day after day. We produce data and we produce reports. And I talk to the vice president daily and to members of the task force daily. They're working very hard on developing more therapeutics and more vaccines for us. And so we're working as one great, incredible team who really gets along and really openly shares and have scientific discussions about how best to move forward in some of these difficult questions. And I think you are very wise to talk about masks and social distancing, because if the communities adopt that are hotspots, like in LA County right now, you'd have a dramatic impact on the number of new cases when you combine that with the aggressive testing you're doing.
Well, we hope everybody wears a mask, including the folks at the White House. And we appreciate all the work that you're doing. I can only imagine how exhausting all of this must be for you. And we appreciate your service to our country. Dr. Birx, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And now the issue is education. Let's talk about the future of California schools amid the coronavirus with the top ranking education official in the state. Tony Thurman is the superintendent of public instruction in California. Mr. Thurman, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time.
Thank you, Alex. It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right, so let's start with the big question. Come the fall, this is what parents want to know, what kids want to know. What are public schools going to look like in California?
You know, we've released guidance for our 10,000 schools on how to prepare for opening. It won't surprise you that it has many of the same precautions in it that we talk about when we're in the community, that staff and students should be wearing a face covering, and that we're going to have to maintain physical distance of 6 feet in our schools. These are the things that we know, and of course, lots of hand washing. We know that these create some challenges for our schools, but we're working through that guidance to help our schools figure out how to implement the details around spacing.
So we've had this experience with distance learning, and I know some of the guidance said some schools may choose to do some distance learning or every other day or some version of it. What do you think is working from distance learning? What do you think is not working from distance learning?
This is not the way that our education system has worked. And it exposed a major digital divide with a million students in California who don't have access to high-speed internet, or in some cases, no internet at all. And so naturally, there have been some bumps in distance learning, and some learning gaps that have been exacerbated. But we're working with our school districts to be prepared to do this in a better way. And even though there's no one-size-fits-all, we want to make sure that there's quality and that distance learning looks the same, about the same, from class to class. And so we know that we'll be prepared to provide even better support to our students through distance learning as we go forward.
And you mentioned the term learning gaps. Are you concerned that this was essentially a lost semester for so many kids? Do you think kids should repeat grades?
Students are always learning, and I don't know that we need to repeat the year. I don't know that it's a complete loss. We do know that when students return to school, some will need additional support. Now, during the summer, some schools are actually going to open up a little bit early to provide some additional enrichment.
One thing I keep hearing from a lot of parents is concerns about childcare going forward. This idea that maybe kids go to physical school every other day or rotating weeks, things like that. And parents have to work and make their own schedules, and they're concerned about that.
California has said that there still must be the minimum number of days, 180 days. That won't change. Schools will get flexibility on the number of minutes that can be for instruction, But for the most part, students really will have to be in school every day. Now, that might mean a few hours in the morning or a few hours in the afternoon, because we have to maintain small class sizes.
But you get how that's complicated for parents to try to figure that out?
Yes, I can see how it's completely complicated. And right now, most of our 1,000 school districts are surveying parents to ask them what are their interests and what are their needs. Our school districts want to be able to accommodate what parents are looking for. And I can tell you, Alex, that what we've heard, by and large, for most school districts is they are looking for in-class and in-person instruction.
Another thing I've heard from a lot of parents and from students is that they want to have high school sports back. But how do you do that safely?
Whether or not we have high school sports remains to be seen. You know, I always say that our top pillars have to be focused on safety first. We can't open schools unless it's safe for kids to do so. You know, contact sports can put kids at risk. And so safety has to be first. I know it's hard, but I ask people to hang in there because school doesn't really open for most of our schools until late August or early September. We're monitoring the situation on a daily basis with our health experts, and we expect that there'll be some updates in the very near future.
And in 2020, a couple months feels like 3 or 4 years, so you never know what's going to happen between now and August as well. All right, well, we've got to pause for a moment, but up next, more with Tony Thurman. When we come back, should we defund school police? What about racial bias in schools?
Our children are going to school to learn, not to be criminalized.
This week, activists pushed to defund school police. But is that really a good idea? We're back with Tony Thurman, California Superintendent of Public Instruction, joining us via Skype from Richmond. Mr. Superintendent, here's the question. If we defund police at schools, what happens if, God forbid, there's another school shooting?
I think that people would agree that police should not be responding to situations where someone's having mental health distress or someone is homeless. And so this is really causing us to have a conversation about making some reforms in policing. And that extends to what happens in our schools, too. A police officer should never, ever again be used as the dean of students or the disciplinarian to students who are doing things that students do. Students, you know, should not be criminalized or arrested for engaging in student behavior. But still, there needs to be some way to address serious issues on campus, like a bomb threat or guns on campus.
Let's also talk about the issue of race. You're one of the highest-ranking African-American officials in the state of California. And there's been so much discussion about the way that African-American history is taught in schools. Do you think it needs to be taught in a different way in California? What would that look like?
The students have asked for more ethnic studies. And so the California Department of Education is developing an ethnic studies curriculum. But it won't be ready to be voted on until next year. So in the meantime, we are rolling out a mini series on ethnic studies so that students can see positive representations of themselves. We're going to have some incredible Californians who will participate. And we've rolled out a campaign on implicit bias training for all educators in all of our 10,000 schools in California.
And speaking of contributions, you have made contributions yourself. This is your first time on this show. What's different about this show versus a lot of other political shows is we really like to get to know the people that we're talking to and get to know a little bit about their personal story. And you've got quite a story of you know, heartache with your immediate family and how that fueled your passion for education. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I've often said that education has been the great equalizer for me in my own life, and I believe that for all students. You know, I come from humble beginnings. You know, I lost my mother to cancer when I was 6 years old. My dad was a Vietnam vet who could not reconnect with our family. As a matter of fact, I met my father for the first time after we found him on the internet. I was just about 40 years old. And when my mom lost her battle to cancer, I was raised by a cousin who I met for the first time when I showed up on her doorstep. She also struggled, but she provided for us. We used a lot of public assistance, the free lunch program, food stamps, but she insisted that we get a great public education. And my teachers always told me that my life would be better than it started if I just believed in education. And they were right. And education's opened the door for me to become a social worker, work with young people, work with seniors, and to become a public servant to make my community better.
Tony Thurman, thank you so much.
Thank you. Be well, and thank you for having me on.
We appreciate the time. But there is one job that's open right now. And that, of course, is vice president nominee for Joe Biden. There's so much discussion.
Wow.
Are you being vetted for that job?
No, I'm not being vetted unless it's in secret and I don't know about it. No, I'm not being vetted. And
if you were offered it, would you accept it?
If I was offered it, of course I would.
Yeah, the first time California Congresswoman Karen Bass was ever asked about the vice presidency on camera on this show 2 weeks ago. How the world has changed. She now is being vetted. But how serious is that? Let's talk about that and more with our panel. Two of my all-time favorite people, two of the smartest people I know, excited to have them here. Carla Marinucci is back. She, of course, is the dean of the California Political Press Corps. She is the senior writer of the California Politico Playbook, which I read every day. You can subscribe to it for free and get it emailed to you every weekday. Brian Goldsmith is back. In his past life, he was a journalist for CBS News, Yahoo, The Atlantic, the Katie Couric podcast. He's moved over to the other side. He was an advisor to the Pete Buttigieg campaign. He helped us set up our USC town hall with Mayor Pete. He's now a consultant for Kona Media and Message, working on different campaigns across the country. Carla, Brian, welcome to you both.
Great to be here.
Good to be with you.
How realistic is it that Karen Bass could be the VP? Is this a real thing?
I mean, remember that she had to fight her way through half a dozen men back in 2008 to become Speaker of the California State Assembly. She was the first Black woman to hold that position and the first Black woman in U.S. history to hold that legislative state role. She went toe-to-toe with Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. She knows how to do it. She knows how to wrangle those votes. She's been talking about as possibly succeeding Nancy Pelosi as Speaker. She's a longtime supporter of Pelosi. She's been there for her through thick and thin. I think Pelosi is one of the reasons she's being talked up right now, Alex, for this job.
I think it's serious. I think you got to respect Speaker Pelosi's political acumen. I'll say I think she's terrific. I think there are a number of people on the list who are terrific. The two criteria, though, that really matter, number one, same as in medicine, first, do no harm. Number two, Joe Biden's got to pick somebody he's comfortable with as a partner in the White House and potentially as his successor. All the rest of it, all the kind of checklists that people feel have to be filled out, I think most of that is just noise.
So who is that person? And Brian, what about California's Senator Kamala Harris, who's been a part of this conversation since the beginning?
Kamala is quite formidable. And if you're looking for somebody who is a Black woman and ready to be president on day one, it's a pretty short list. And Kamala's got to be at the top of it. You know, people say that she ran an underwhelming presidential campaign. So did Joe Biden in 2008 before he was picked. And he was an excellent vice president. I don't think that is disqualifying at all.
Look, I mean, Kamala is considered number one on most of the list at this point. She's getting some scrutiny for her role as a district attorney in San Francisco, as attorney general, particularly as you talk about police reform during the Black Lives Matter protests. But the fact is, as a communicator, especially in the past couple of weeks, she has hit it out of the park a number of times on that Senate floor, delivering speeches that have gone viral.
You know, advocates for Karen Bass would say Kamala Harris has that baggage of being a prosecutor before. Karen Bass was a healthcare worker. Speaking of do no harm, she was involved in healthcare. Now coronavirus is such an important issue. She also has a lot of credibility with the Black community as the chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus. But let's talk about the presidential race, sort of the bigger picture of it, and put up some poll results. This is from this week. It shows the swing state numbers. And you see right now, the president is down in almost every single swing state. That is a real problem for him. Brian, do you feel like this race, which, by the way, there's going to be like 85,000 more news cycles before this race is over, but do you feel like this race is now going in a different direction than where it was?
I think that if Donald Trump loses, we're going to look back and say that he was in trouble before, but June was the month in which he definitively lost the race. You know, he did that ridiculous walk across the across from the White House to St. John's Church, holding up a Bible that he's never opened. He missed completely the national reckoning on race. His language was not just off or wrong, it was offensive. He concluded with that absurd rally, that half-empty rally in Ruby Red, Oklahoma, in which he's ranting and raving. saying things that are completely offensive to the voters that he needs. So I do think that we've reached a different stage of this race. It doesn't mean that it's over. It doesn't mean that Trump couldn't come back. He's just at a severe disadvantage.
Well, up next, we're going to have more with Carla and Brian. We're going to talk about Governor Newsom's response to coronavirus.
Now, many of us, understandably, developed a little cabin fever. Some, I would argue, have developed a little amnesia.
Governor Newsom pleading with Californians this week to take the coronavirus seriously, wear masks, socially distance, etc. But are people listening to him? Back with our panel, Carla Marinucci and Brian Goldsmith. Carla, when you were on with us a few months ago, right when all this started, we were talking about Governor Newsom having like 80% approval ratings and everybody loving everything that he did. Now it's a little more complicated picture. It's got to be hard for him to lead in this moment. What do you make of what he's doing right now?
Right now, the cases are on the rise in California. He has become the implorer in chief, Alex, in terms of all but getting down on his knees and begging people to wear those masks and social distance. They do not want to start closing down things again, but we're now seeing the signs that, of that happening. San Francisco on Friday saying they're going to delay the reopening of bars, of nail salons, of tattoo parlors, because the numbers are up. Imperial County now being asked to issue another stay-at-home order because their hospitalization numbers are up so high.
Well, I hate to lay everything at the feet of Donald Trump, but I'm just going to go ahead and do that. Governors are working against a current, and that is the president's own messaging, which contradicts what the public health experts in his administration are saying. I think when the history is written, Trump's decision to tribalize masks, not to take seriously, to try to wish away this disease, is going to be roundly condemned. And I think the voters are responding negatively to it already. There should be one message that's based on the facts and the evidence and not based on trying to scrape a partisan advantage out of a pandemic.
Almost every reputable health expert we talk to say, wear your mask, including the president's own health experts right here on the show. Dr. Birx, as we started the show earlier. Carla, Brian, great to see both of you. Thank you so much for adding your insights and analysis. I could talk to you all day. I love you both.
We love
Thanks,
you too,
guys.
Alex.
Our thanks to everybody for listening to the show this week. We hope that you are safe and wear your masks and try to comply. And next week, who knows what's going to happen? It's hard to keep up all of this. Please let me know, though, what you thought of this week's show in social media, at Alex Michelson. Love hearing feedback on the show. And let other people know, if you can, about the show. We'd love to get the word out there as well. Have a great week. I'm Alex Michelson. See you next time.